I want to give a little lecture which I have called Jiva Goswami or the Development of Bhakti after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's times. If nowadays you try to find out in scholarly textbooks about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, you will usually find that there is a general opinion that Mahaprabhu's movement was a movement for emotional sentimentalists. One textbook really expresses this in a nice way. It says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought the emotional bhakti, no, brought the worship of Krishna to new emotional heights. This is a general understanding which you can also find at the time when Mahaprabhu was preaching Krishna consciousness in India. You know that Mahaprabhu's waves of ecstasy had flooded all of India, but when he came to Varanasi, the town of the Mayavadis, at first he couldn't do anything there. Mahaprabhu then left Varanasi and he said, commenting about the town, I have brought my emotional goods, but there were no customers. He referred obviously to Prakashananda Saraswati, 60,000 disciples who were so much in the mood of intellectual wrangling that they just had no access to bhakti. Later, when Mahaprabhu again came through Varanasi, there was a confrontation, and in this confrontation you can see really what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought and what was the general opposition against his movement. I personally believe that this opposition is still going on today. By Mahaprabhu's divine arrangement, he stayed as a guest of his devotees, and he had made up his mind to give his mercy to the Mayavadis, although they didn't want it. So one fine day, a Brahmana came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, I have an invitation. There is Prakashananda Saraswati and all his leading disciples, and please do come and eat lunch with them together. Mahaprabhu said, yes, I shall come. So he went to this lunch engagement. And this is now very important, and I believe if you can follow it with your heart and with your mind, you will have great spiritual benefit. He sat down at the place where everyone washed his feet and stayed there. Prakashananda Saraswati and his sannyasi's disciple were already in the dining hall, but Mahaprabhu would not come into the dining hall. Prakashananda personally got up to look where was Mahaprabhu, because he was the talk of the town. He and his sannyasi disciples had seen him dancing in Krishna Kirtan, and they had never seen such a thing. I mean, when Mahaprabhu danced, you can't believe it was a deeply spiritual experience. He would cry, and it is described that the water just didn't come out like this from his eyes, but it came in a high, syringe-like, also spritzen-ähnlicher, drenched anyone who stood up to 3 meters near to him. And he would shout, he would sometimes roll on the ground, his body would become double the size. He would have goose pimples. He looked like a tree in flower. It is described that the earth shook. It was quite something. I mean, if you saw him, it was the talk of the town. Everyone spoke about him. So Prakashananda Saraswati went and he saw Mahaprabhu sitting where everyone washed his feet, and he said, oh my dear, this is a dirty place. You've come to the lunch engagement. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, I will eat, but I will eat here, because I am not competent to sit with such highly elevated sannyasis as you are. I belong to a lower group of sannyasis. So Prakashananda said, it's all right, come with us. And he brought him to a sitting place amongst all the sannyasis. And then they began to talk. He said, we all see you dancing with uneducated people in Varanasi. Why don't you come with us and study together Vedanta Sutra? At that time, being a sannyasi meant to study Vedanta Sutra. It's just like for us, when we have a Hare Krishna guest and he doesn't come for the kirtan, we will go, why don't you come to the kirtan? Is there some reason why you do not come to the kirtan? We feel if there is a devotee of Krishna who doesn't come to the kirtan, we feel there must be an extraordinary reason which we don't know. So the sannyasis also, you are a sannyasi, you are initiated by one of our other sannyasis, Keshava Bharata. He was Bharati, he was also in the school, our school of Shankara, and you don't come and mix with us. What is the reason? Could you please give an explanation? So there were not 1,000 sannyasis listening as their Guru Maharaj was asking this sannyasi, who totally went out of the norm, a question. And Mahaprabhu very humbly said, I'm a great fool. My spiritual master told me I should just chant Hare Krishna, not study this highly intellectual Vedanta Sutra. And as I started to chant, I felt great signs of ecstasy. I was crying and so on and so forth. And so I went to my spiritual master and asked him, Guru Maharaj, I'm feeling I'm becoming mad with ecstasy. Is this normal? Is this all right? Or is something going wrong in my development? And my Guru Maharaj said, you have reached the goal. This is the sign of prema bhakti, of love for Krishna. This is very good. So then Prakashananda Saraswati, he said, very good. He, like Yamuna is here, he must have said, Dobro, this is all right. It is all right that you have love for Krishna in your heart. No one says anything against it. But tell me, I mean, without philosophy, without proper knowledge, where will you go? You will be an emotional, a sentimentalist. And we all see you dancing with these uneducated people on the streets. Without philosophy, a human being is like an animal. So, all right, you have your love for Krishna. That's your private affair. Medyutam. Mediocre means, but I mean, where is your real process? Your real, you must have a philosophy. I think by now you can understand where Shankaracharya, where Prakashananda Sarasvati is coming from. He is a proponent of the path of knowledge, jnana, which results in detachment from this world, and which is a very good, it's a valid path. And he asked, like the people today, where is your philosophy, please? Where is your basis in life, please? Sometimes we find devotees in the Hare Krishna movement also feeling this feeling. It is all right to have bhakti, but let us also, you know, go to the university and study a little bit. Now, I'm not talking about a study project like we have in the Oxford Center for Hindu Studies, or also our Gauranga Das studying it, so that he can use the knowledge which he acquires for preaching Krishna consciousness to a wider circle of people. This is very good. This is a principle called Yukta Vairagya. We use something not for us, for our spiritual advancement, but we use it for preaching. I'm talking now against, I also don't want to talk against anything. I'm talking about the understanding which is very prevalent, that knowledge itself is good for my spiritual advancement. It is necessary. Without it, I cannot make it in my spiritual life. This is a different path than bhakti, where we think, we need love. Knowledge is not as important as love. See, the reason why in bhakti love is more important than knowledge is because only by love you come close to God. You cannot come close to God by knowledge. And we can say only if you love someone you can obtain real knowledge about this person. Isn't it? I think if those of you who are in the Grihastha Ashram or who are thinking about the Grihastha Ashram, they must be knowing him. No one knows, let me say, a person as close as the person who loves that person. You know, someone who loves another person knows that person really. Without love, you cannot come to the more personal qualities of a person. When you don't love a person, or where there is no relationship of love, there will be some type of distance, which is just natural. But by love, this distance is bridged over. Durch Liebe wird Distanz überbrückt. And then you get to know the more intimate or personal qualities of a person. So you cannot know God really by jnana, by intellectual knowledge. You can only know him by bhakti. And in this way, enter, as Krishna says, the secret of my understanding. There's a very secret area around Lord Krishna, and this secret area can only be entered by love, not by knowledge. So all right, said Prakashananda, you have love, that's your private affair, but please, where is your philosophy? And as we all know, Mahaprabhu did have a very, very elaborate philosophy. Prakashananda Sarasvati was totally surprised when Mahaprabhu began to discuss with him. And and bit by bit showed that Prakashananda's previous knowledge was incomplete and sometimes even wrong. And Prakashananda Saraswati, after listening to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, experienced something which he never ever had dreamt about. You must know, he was a big proponent of Shankara's stream of thought, of the Jnana school in India. He had many students, but as he listened to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as he listened to Mahaprabhu's knowledge, and I'm speaking now his Bhakti Jnana, his knowledge which he had, which was full of Bhakti, he found that his previous understanding was superseded, also sein vorangegangenes Verständnis wurde weit übertroffen by what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to him, and in the end he became a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This transformation is very important. Sometimes people say bhakti is only an emotional thing and so on, but when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was preaching, the greatest intellectuals of his time were attracted and became his devotees. He attracted, for instance, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, and also the greatest guru of India at that time, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Hare Krishna. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a grihastha, but he had such a vast amount of knowledge that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was considered the guru of the sannyasis in that time. People, great sannyasis or spiritual leaders, came and posed their questions to him, and he gave very satisfying answers. So afterwards, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became a transform. After meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the same thing happened, which happened to all the other intellectuals. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became transformed and became a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I would like to read to you now a wonderful account about his transformation. It's about a Sankirtan party. There was a Sankirtan party, and you will see how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya behaved in this Sankirtan party, and you will see the dignified scholar, der würdevolle Gelehrte, has now totally become transformed into wir sagen in Deutsch ein Blisspaket, into a blissful Vaishnav, who is really jumping around like a little child, a child of ecstasy. So here it is. Listen to this, and I hope you will become surprised and pleased hearing this about this Sankirtan parties. Accompanied by his devotees, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then went into the garden and enjoyed the pastimes of Vrindavan. He remembered when he was Krishna and when he was going with the cowherd boys for cowherding pastimes. There were many trees and creepers in the garden, and they were all jubilant to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It seemed Mahaprabhu had a relationship to the trees also, who became happy when they saw him. Indeed, the birds were chirping, the bees were buzzing, and a cool breeze was blowing. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced beneath each and every tree, Vasudev Datta sang alone. Now, can you imagine? Mahaprabhu went And because he is teaching the religion of the holy name and dance everywhere, under every tree he's dancing and chanting. As Vasudev Datta sang a different song beneath each and every tree, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced there alone in great ecstasy. Apparently Mahaprabhu runs through this garden, goes through the trees which remind him of Vrindavan, and dances in ecstasy. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered Brakeshwara Pandit to dance, and as he began to dance, the Lord began to sing. You must know Brakeshwara Pandit is another ecstatica. Then he would be dance and sing for 72 hours without a stop. Premamayi, you are very tired this morning. He would dance for 72 hours, and when Mahaprabhu looked at him, he became so enlivened and encouraged that he said, if I would have another wing like you, an andere Flügel, I would fly, Rakeshwara Pandit. You know, have you ever been in a kirtan where you felt like flying? Yamuna has. Then you know it is really, this is the real experience which we are looking for. We want to forget that we are human beings, people of the earth. When we do kirtan, our identification with the body gets slackened, and we sometimes feel like flying. I know in Mayapur, when you dance before the deities, there are moments in your life where you don't touch the floor any longer. You have the objective, well, it's always a subjective experience, but others also say to you, you were flying today. What happened? Mahaprabhu's grace happened. Yes, so the Lord, he said, Vrakeshwara, I need a second dancer like you, and I would fly. Then devotees like Swarup Damodar and other kirtan performers began to sing along with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Being inundated by ecstatic love, they lost all considerations of time and circumstances. So now is a whole kirtan party. Swarup Damodar Maharaj is there, and others. And after performing such a kirtan for some time, they all went to take a bath. And now we come to the point which we want to look at. After sporting in the water, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned to the garden and accepted prasadam with the devotees. For 9 continuous days, His Lordship Sri Jagannath Deva stayed at the Gundicha temple. During this time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also stayed there and performed the pastimes with his devotees that have already been described. I must say, these are all very nice. So the pastimes which Mahaprabhu performed are here. They would perform Sankirtan, and they would think of Lord Chaitanya, of Krishna in separation. And then the Lord went into the lake with his devotees, the lake named Indradyumna, and he sported in the water. The Lord personally splashed all the devotees with water, and the devotees surrounding him on all sides also splashed the Lord. While in the water, they sometimes formed one circle and sometimes many circles. And while in the water, they used to play cymbals and imitate the croaking of frogs. Jabats, 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 they would say. Sometimes, two would pair off to fight in the water fights. One would emerge victorious and the other defeated, and the Lord would watch all this fun. The first sporting took place between Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu, who threw water upon each other. Advaita Acharya was defeated, and he later began to rebuke Nityananda Prabhu, calling him ill names. Ill names heißt Schimpfwörter. You know, this is Mahaprabhu's greatest associates, Advaita Acharya, the teacher of the knowledge of Bhakti, and Nityananda Prabhu, the Avaduta, who gives pure love. What are they doing? They are in the lake, and they begin to splash each other, and then call each other ill names. We know what these ill names are. Advaita Acharya would say to Nityananda, "You are a reject Paramahansa, also ein aus der Gesellschaft ausgeschlossener Paramahansa." Swabhu Damodar and Vidyanidhi also threw water upon each other. And Murari Gupta and Vasudev Datta also sported in that vein. Another duel took place between, and then all the parties are given, and it is said that indeed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was also amongst the devotees in water sports, and he fought with Sri Ramananda Roy, and they both lost their gravity and became like children. My dear devotees, please understand what is going on. These were the most dignified people of the time who had come in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and now played around like children in the water. I mean, if you have a professor at the moment, either a big Pandit professor in the University of Dresden, and you know, you would see him splashing around in some lake and you know, you would see some very nice change has taken place. You know, yesterday I was sitting on the bank of the Elbe, and there was a big tourist boat coming, and you know, I always like to see how the people feel in wherever I am, and I was waving them, and they all were very dignified. They turned away. They couldn't see that I had a dhoti on because I was sitting very, very, very happily. But you know, I noticed this is the style here in this part of the world. If you would do this in Croatia, they would go like, but here. Es ist nicht vorgesehen. It is not planned to do this. So a professor, you also don't expect him to get with his cloth in a lake and start to play around like a child. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the exuberance of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, also die Wildheit, and Ramananda Roy, he smiled and spoke to Gopinath Acharya. "Tell the Bhattacharya and Ramananda Roy to stop their childish play, because they are both learned scholars and very grave. They are great personalities." Gopinath Acharya replied, "I believe that one drop of the ocean of your great mercy has swelled up upon them. A drop," and now Gopinath Acharya, he speaks about the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is very important. "A drop from the ocean of your mercy can drown great mountains like Sumeru and Mandara. Since these two gentlemen are little hills by comparison, it is no wonder that they are being drowned in the ocean of your mercy." Do you follow? the mercy of Mahaprabhu is so great that it is like a big lake or big reservoir of water, a great ocean actually, which can drown even the biggest hill. You don't see it any longer when in such a big ocean, the big hill or mountain is it disappears there. And then he says, Gopinath Acharya says something which is very important. Logic is like a dry oil cake. You know, these oil cakes, they don't taste like anything. They're just baked in oil, but they are really dry because they couldn't absorb anything. From which oil, so logic is like a dry oil cake from which all the oil has been extracted. The Bhattacharya passed his life in eating such dry cakes, but now you have made him drink the nectar of transcendental pastimes. It is certainly your great mercy. You know, this is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is moving in opposites. He was a big scholar is becoming like a little child. He who is a little child is becoming a big scholar, like the child Gopal. He was only 8 years, and Mahaprabhu gave him the name Gopal Guru. Someone who is low becomes high, and someone who is high becomes low. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's extraordinary movement. The Muslim Haridas Thakur, no one would even care for him. He became the Acharya, the Nam Acharya. Rupa and Sanatan were expelled from the society, and they became both the Tattva Acharya and the Rasa Acharya. Sanatan the Tattva and Rupa the Rasa Acharya. It's a total transformation which takes place, which is the whole idea of Mahaprabhu's transcendental movement. Everything is opposite. The most dignified scholars became like children, the low became high scholars and acharyas. This is something for today. Tomorrow I will discuss about one particular Goswami in our line who did something amazing. He is a Jiva Goswami who grew up in an atmosphere of scholarship and who also was ordered by Nityananda to go and study Sanskrit grammar. He went, so to say, to university, to school, like our devotees who are in the Oxford Center for Vedic Studies, and who learned something and who used his knowledge in really building up the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We will hear tomorrow about Jiva's extraordinary personality and his four amazing accomplishments. One of this accomplishment is that he really organized the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and brought it to what it is. I wanted to speak about this because we are also thinking of trying to bring the preaching of Krishna consciousness to a new dimension. And if you hear about Jiva Goswami and how he did it, we might be able to extract some principles how to do it. See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement after the great master, great Mahaprabhu means the great master, had left was organized by Jiva Goswami in a very, very interesting way, and became a very at that time a very strong force in India. In other words, the momentum which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given was carried on by Jiva Goswami. It is very, very interesting. When I heard this and then I studied a little and put the notes together to this lecture, I felt just very amazed, and I want to share this little research with you tomorrow. But for now, I really wanted to first bring the point that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is a movement of ecstatic love and a movement of bhakti, where jnana, or the intellectual knowledge, is really on the second place, not on the first place. And I wanted to show you how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and how he became, you know, like a little child who splashed water. Of course, as we will see tomorrow, the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the same time has the greatest amount of spiritual knowledge. There is now even you know, when I was in Varanasi, I also went to the university there, which is, as far as I have seen, the biggest campus. It's a huge town within the town. They even have their own big university temple. It's a wonderful temple, which is very nice, with Lord Shiva and also Radha Krishna, I've seen, as far as I can remember. And spent a whole day in the university campus, and there we could also meet people who, from the philosophy department, and they showed us Jiva Goswami's books are studied still to this time there. And those who know philosophy know that there was never a greater philosopher on this planet Earth than Jiva Goswami. This is even in circles of knowledge, it is accepted. I'm saying this so that our Bhakta Frank is also enlivened. You know, it is not that because bhakti is on the first place that there is no place for knowledge. This would be wrong to say. And we will hear tomorrow something about this, which will be quite interesting. But for now, I just wanted to set the priorities so that tomorrow we can understand it better. So, do you have any questions, Gadara?
But if someone is not on the level of Brahman, of realizing his own spiritual identity, still identifying with subtle or gross matter, then his emotions within bhakti will also be material, one could say. So then in this case, and this jnana, which means realizing of one's Brahman nature, Brahmasmi, is the basis. Without this jnana, no bhakti will just be material emotion and some dancing and jumping. This is very nice, but what has it to do with transcendence? We can define jumping and dancing and getting crazy, this is higher, but just by definition it doesn't convince me.
This was an argument raised by Advaita Acharya to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who then jumped on him and brought him to the ground. You are in a very dangerous position, Gadadhar. You're just trying to bring your bones together by the Paki method, and now you have said something which is highly dangerous in No. I want to put the joking. It's a very good point which Gadadhar has raised, and I would like to repeat it again. Obviously, the spiritual emotions which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must be talking about can't be material emotions, jumping around like crazy under each tree and so on. Cannot be defined per se as spiritual. Spiritual means you have to understand that you are a spiritual soul, you are Brahman, which is understanding which comes ordinarily by jnana. then when you are on that level of your spiritual identity, that you are, then you can have spiritual emotions. Otherwise, you have material emotions. So I'm not convinced of this, that this bhakti is higher than jnana. Obviously, the bhakti movement cannot rest on material emotions. If it does so, we have something which the Gaudiyas have always criticized. We have a Sahajiya movement, who base their whole understanding on material emotions. The Sahajiya means, despite, I don't want to enter the polemical understanding of what Sahajiya means. Sahajiya means to take everything on in an easy way. Take it easy. So they say, well, if Nityananda was divine, Nityananda, then I am also divine, and I can do what a divine personality does. I can do what Krishna does. The argument they say is, look, when someone threw a stone on Nityananda, blood was drawn. This happens also when someone throws a stone on my body. So my body and the body of Nityananda is same. It is also a spiritual body. Let's not make it complicated. And with a spiritual body, I can do what Krishna also does. I can do my own, relationships with women. This is where we say they take a material position and want to make it spiritual. And the same can be said about taking your emotions and declare them as spiritual. No, by bhakti, if you follow bhakti in the right way, then your spiritual emotions for Krishna are awakened. This is described in the verse which we always quote, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sat Yakabunoi Shravanadi Shuddha Shite Karaye Udhoi, that by the processes of bhakti, your Krishna Prema, which is a spiritual thing which is inherent, becomes awakened. And this process has been compared in the Hari Bhakti Vilas with an alchemical transformation. It said by the initiation in this process, you become transformed and changed almost like ordinary iron, what is it? Ordinary brass becomes transformed by an alchemical process, and is gold. So, therefore, in our bhakti tradition, we are very, very, we have a very elaborate philosophy of that a spiritualization of a person. You know, we say you must pass through the processes, through the different stages. You must come to the anatta nivritti process level, where you're free from anattas, where the anattas have been, so to say, taken out of your personality, that is material attachments, and then you have attained the process of ruchi and asakti, and then spiritual emotions begin to manifest fully. I'm at this moment, just yesterday I prepared a longer lecture on the role of emotions and the transformations of emotions in bhakti. It's a very interesting subject, and it's only in my head, but there it becomes very clear that emotions in themselves are coming and going, anitya, like the waves on an ocean. Govinda Kaviraj speaks about the Bhava Sindure, the ocean of emotions, where there are so many waves which come and go. But in bhakti, you learn how to purify these material emotions by directing them on Krishna. I was very amazed, Gadadhar, when Prabhupada once spoke to one god sister of mine. She always used to cry before the deities. And maybe she had she lost her husband, and that was a great part of her tears, material emotions, in other words. She was just a young devotee. And usually we say crying before the deities, that's not done. You know, you've created an inconvenience for the deities and so on. But maybe the material emotions most properly. But Prabhupada encouraged her and said, yes, you cry, and this sentiment is very good. And thinking that one day, because she's fixed on Krishna, one day it will become real tears. Only a soft, Rupa Goswami describes really three types of hearts. The first heart, he says, it's the heart which is like a thunderbolt. Pang! The thunderbolt will never become soft. It will always destroy. So there are hard-hearted people who have hearts like thunderbolts. Then there's a heart like gold, which can melt easier. And then there's a heart like shellac. Shellac is something like wax, which can melt quite easy. So if you want to enter the process of bhakti, it's good to have a soft heart which can melt. But you must learn to purify these emotions and direct them to Krishna, so that they become transformed. Emotions, in other words, are not to be given up. It's something which can be purified easily. So while we are at one side cautioning very much about material emotions and thinking they are not real, and we are even having theological quarrels with groups which very much base on tell nice stories, and then everyone feels for some time, you know, and then maybe this is called anitya emotions, temporary emotions. At the same time, we say in our bhakti, we are not afraid of emotions, but we are directing them to Krishna, and we are hoping they will be transformed, and so on. You can measure your own transformation of emotions, Gadadhar, and by Gadadhar, every one of us can measure by how much affection you have for Krishna and how much detachment you feel from matter. This is a very easy test, a litmus test, where you can see is it working with me? Am I progressing? And so on. And when this attachment to Krishna comes, even if it is at the beginning not yet the real thing, you will see in contact with Krishna, who is in the Bhakti Rasayana Shlokas described to be a place of pilgrimage, and the contact of Krishna, there is a hope that it can be transformed. If it is carefully done, and if there is no sahajiyaism in the thing, then this is possible to happen. So bhakti is higher than jnana. I'm not such a Streithals, so good in quarreling philosophically, but this is my answer. Hare Krishna.
Yes, I understand. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says is Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochatita Kanshati.
Yeah.
I think is the fourth line Madhatu.
Lavate Param. One attains bhakti when one is on the platform of Brahman.
Yes. So, if we make a test of the devotees, is it on the level of Brahman? Sometimes we find out that Sochatina Kamshani, Brahma Buddha is not really. Is there? So, how? Yes. What is this then?
This shloka, Brahma Buddha Prasanatma, seems to say, says Gadadha, that the real bhaktista is achieved only if one is on that level of Brahman, where one is free from hankering and hankering and lamentation. Yes. Sometimes we see that devotees are not free from hankering and lamentation. It's very interesting. I studied this in the Bhakti. This is Bhajan Rahasya. And the Bhajan Rahasya is a guidebook which brings us to bhakti. And there also it is said in the chapter called Ruchi that a devotee should not lament when he loses his things which he likes very much, and he should not lament when there's loss of food, no breakfast today. Don't lament, and loss of cloth when cloths are not attained. So this is true. When you want to make advancement in bhakti, it is described when there's always hankering and lamenting in the mind, then how can a mind who is full of hankering and lamentation think of Mukunda and have the darshan of Mukunda? But the way to get there, this is very important now, is not jnana. The way to get there is bhakti. Because through the process of bhakti, you will be purified and get there. It is true, the higher states of bhakti can only come when there is a spiritual realization of our personality. Uh, that we are spiritual, we are not the material body. But to get there, it's not that we should practice jnana, but we should chant Hare Krishna. This is the way of Bhajanda has here. In the real way, obviously. In the real way means japa should be done with the heart. Japa means utterances with the heart. In other words, you bring your personality and your emotions or what your subtle body, this is what it means, and you merge it in the sound vibration of the holy name, and then the holy name will start to vibrate in your subtle body. At this moment in our subtle body there is another vibration which goes totally through. It's the vibration of I want to enjoy. This is our vibration at the moment. And that is why it is very difficult for Hare Krishna chanters. They don't want to concentrate on the holy name. In fact, if you do concentrate, in your subtle body you feel very uncomfortable after some time. It is described when the conditioned soul comes to the material world, he turns his face away from the Lord, and the conditioned soul can only enjoy if he turns his face, if he goes into an area where Krishna is not there, that is the darkness. In this way, the conditioned soul is compared to be like a firefly who can exhibit his light not in the face of the sun. It needs the darkness. If you have ever been to Goloka, I want to say it like this. Just a few days ago, I was in Goloka Dham and I made a little walk, a night walk. In the forest, I could not rest, and I was walking in the forest, and there were so many flies flying. It was really mystical. They were like, the one was landing on my bibek, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It was really like in a mystical movie. It was so beautiful, and this is us, Gadadha. Or why we are turning our face from Krishna in order to exhibit our own little light, our knowledge, our charisma, our whatever we want to show to the world. And because our subtle body is vibrating with the mood, I want to enjoy. Now when you come to chant, and you are told to concentrate and to chant with love for Krishna, it's a tall order. Es ist eine schwierige Aufgabe. It's a tall order, and our ego doesn't like it. I mean, I know, well, in my case, when you go on these japa marathons where you chant the whole day, there is a time where you just feel dry. Very dry, because the mind is still thinking, let me enjoy spiritual life. Now, nothing to read, nothing to look at, just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Oh, Krishna, please, please, please. When is some nice prasad? I'm coming. No nice prasad, only Kittari the whole month. Oh, Krishna, Krishna. And then comes the time where you need to do the paradigm shift. You either you are lost in space, or you surrender and bring your mind into the vibration of the holy name, and then it's a whole different idea. Krishna is the enjoyer. My chanting is not for my pleasure, It is meant for the pleasure of someone else. It is not made even for my advancement. I'm not chanting because I want to make advancement now, or because I want to follow my vows. It is meant for Krishna's pleasure. And once you enter this vibration, then you will come to the real name. Then Krishna's name will really manifest in your heart, and you will get the Naam Kripa, and then your spiritual life. You could say in some sense it starts. In one very high sense you can say only then it starts. In another sense you could say even when I'm on the way to this stage it has started.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This is something actually I never understood how it works. How do the jnanis apply knowledge for realizing Brahman? I mean, how is it possible by studying books to realize I'm a busybody? I think this question is also relevant for us, because although jnana is not our means to come to this realization, still we apply knowledge to elevate our dress as mm-hmm. we read the books.
See, how can jnana bring us to spiritual knowledge, to the understanding I am not the body? You must know, in jnana, there is also a sadhan. One knows on the process of jnana that just reading books is not what will bring me to a spiritual level. There are meditations on this path, there's asceticism on this path, and different things. See, in the West we don't have jnanis, the jnanis of the West, or the knowledgeable people in the West, cannot compare really with the jnanis of the East, because in the West there's only, let me say, one insignificant part or one part of the Vedic process of accumulating knowledge, and that is reading and collecting information. It's important, but in the East they know you can only collect informations when you get knowledge if you have a sadhana, a knowledge acquiring sadhana. And there are very interesting meditations, and we are now talking of using some of these meditational techniques to calm the mind. Like you can see they work, like breathing techniques. they work. I'm now requested to do an Naam Yajna in Russia, to organize a Naam Yajna. There are 3,000 people there, and the first thing which we will do, I will put them through a breathing technique, which where you inhale and meditate about the word Ha, and then you exhale and meditate about the word Re, Hari, and it's really amazing what it does. When you have some other, you need to know, have some other knowledge. And jnana is full of these, you know, guidebooks for meditation. It comes from this tradition, but we are using it in the sense of yukta vairagya to calm the mind and bathe the mind in the holy name. Even in our tradition has taken some of these meditational techniques of pranayama, which is described in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, really, how this works. Actually, that would be an interesting thing, Guru Shiromani. Maybe we can just write to Krishna Chaitra Prabhu and some other, if they can translate these portions from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, because they anyways want to translate Hari Bhakti Vilas, and we can include it in the book. That would be very good. So it and then you get some understanding, the mind gets in a mood of distance and calmness, where it's easy to understand, or where it's possible to understand something about the spiritual life. But it's difficult. Ah, the stressful mind. It's difficult. Krishna describes this process in the Gita. He says it's possible, but it's very much difficult. You know, the 12th chapter.
So, the difference is really the lack of surrender, no? That they don't have to undergo through this. That's what they are attracted to.
There is no surrender. You could say yes. There is no Krishna in there, and Krishna is like the sun; he can transform everything very easily. And they don't have Krishna in their process, and it's very difficult. And why don't they have Krishna? Most probably because they don't want to surrender to him. Mm-hmm. I see now, mm-hmm. because we have meetings the whole day. It's 9:10. And I will end the class here. I hope you have been stimulated by these discussions, and please come tomorrow again. Tomorrow we will really this was only a preparation to prepare the stage for Jiva Goswami to enter, he will take the stage tomorrow, hopefully. Good. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Go Prema Nandi Hari Hari Bol.